countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, Going for Growth, we hear about a programme to support women in business. Farmers at the Mart in Ennis tell us what's on their minds. And live in studio, I'll be joined by the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnellogue.
Text 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first... This is Ray O'Fowlew. And we're walking through a small forestry plantation near his home.
We are. We're about 3 kilometres outside Milltown Malby. We're in a townland called Eilean.
Ray is passionate about trees. He's an environmentalist and a conservationist who's interested in agriculture, forestry and biodiversity, and restoring Irish native woodlands.
It's great for me. It's just a really good opportunity to kind of to talk about something I'm interested in.
We chatted earlier this week about the startup charity Home Tree, whom he works for.
Okay, so Home Tree is a small, I don't know if there's such a thing, but it's a little startup charity. It's about 5 years old, and its primary objective is creating permanent native woodlands in Ireland. And, you know, originally the model was very simple. If Damien wanted to pitch in a few bob, we'd get a tree in the ground, or we'd purchase a bit of land and we'd try and create permanent native woodland. But that's evolved as time has gone on. That's evolved, and last year we were awarded about €200,000 in funding from Pippa Hackett's department to run a small-scale EIP, working with local farmers in this catchment to find ways of integrating trees into their farm systems. I suppose it came out of the reality that, look, no matter how much land Home Tree ever acquired, it would be a drop in the ocean compared to all the farmland that's out there. So we saw the big opportunities in working hand in hand with farmers to help them integrate trees into their systems.
Why is there such low tree cover on Irish farms?
Jesus, great question. Like, how far back do you want to go? I was just talking to someone this morning, you know, about the history of forestry in Ireland. As you know, like, at one point the country was covered in great woodlands of oak and elm and Scots pine, and over time we developed iron tools and we cut the woodlands down to make way for agriculture. And that's been our culture, that's been our psyche. You know, what's the saying, another year, another sow, another acre under the plough? It's always about continually improving, continually clearing land for production. And so we moved from forest people, you know, our place names, our own names, Dara from Dara, you know, or Dirren, to, you know, so we were forest people and now we're kind of pastoralists. And that's just been the arc of history. And I think, I suppose, the work of Home Tree and other such organisations, I'd like to think, is to move a little bit back towards that original forest culture we had, you know. I mean, it's in everything around us. As I said, place names, what are the Breton laws, the Ulm alphabet, that all came from the woodlands, you know. So,
do farmers fear that they'll be seen as failures if they plant good land?
Yeah, well, it's always being described at the moment as a big challenge. Getting trees onto farms is a big challenge. And it is, clearly, there's political, there's economic, there's cultural challenges. Mm. But there's also opportunities, and I think that's where we need to go. It's seen now as like, oh, that's a failure. You had to plant the trees because, you know, there was no successor to the farm, or the economics of your farm weren't working out. But I'd like to see more as trees as a way of supporting farm systems and backing up farm income. You know, I was talking to someone yesterday who was talking about the perception on Austrian farms of farm forests, and he said they were considered like a savings account. You know, yes. The forest on the farm was like, if hard times came, you can fell some trees, sell the timber, and that got you through to it. And I love that idea of forests being seen as, you know, having great utility rather than an obligation. If we're in a carbon crisis and we're in a biodiversity crisis, and farmers can get trees in the ground to remediate some of these things, you know, we shouldn't be shy about looking after them financially for doing that. You know, we really shouldn't.
Ray, you're living among farmers here of all shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. You're a conservationist, you're an environmentalist. Do you understand, I suppose, their frustration with, so is the image that has been painted of them in some quarters?
Yeah, of course I do. I mean, look, the reality is farmers, just like myself and yourself, they operate within a system. We all think we're very autonomous, but we're not really. You know, I'm an environmentalist, but I drive a 2-litre diesel car, and I drive it because at the moment it makes the most economic sense and I wouldn't be able to afford a new electric car. Farmers are the exact same, you know. They're using fertilizer because it's the only way they can get enough milk produced to make it, to make their farm viable, or to produce enough beef or enough tillage or whatever. So, like, they're just operating within a system. I mean, this image of farmers having a kind of a being vindictive in relation to the environment is totally erroneous, you know. Like, I mean, I was just up with a farmer who's on we're working with on our EIP the other day. And like so many farmers I meet, you know, he was just so in tune with the nature and his farm. He thought, I have to show you this. Come up here. And he showed me a 1-foot-high little wild Scots pine tree that he'd been observing for the last 2 or 3 years. And, you know, that stuff happens all the time, you know. For a group that get castigated so much for their impact on the environment, and there's no doubt farming has a significant impact on the environment, they're also the most in touch or most connected with the environment, you know.
What sort of farming do you think we will have in this country in 10, 15 years' time?
Honestly, looking at the way things are now, two things are obvious if we keep going the way we're going. Some places are going to suffer from abandonment, you know, where there's nobody to take on farms and land just goes wild, and that's not always a good ecological or environmental outcome. And the other side is we're going to get intensification, which we're already seeing. And what I'd like to see is that, like, farms like the ones around here, which have always been relatively medium intensity, are supported to keep going at that level. Obviously, the role of the farmer, especially here in areas of the West, is going to... Look, they're always going to be farmers. They're always going to be in the business of minding and looking after animals. But they'll also get far more involved into kind of like looking after biodiversity, sequestering carbon, looking after local water quality. And I'd like them to be really well remunerated for those roles. And I don't see any reason why we should be shy about doing that.
When you look around you and you look at the farms in the west of Ireland, what mistakes have we made, in your opinion, through your conservationist eyes over the last 30 or 40 years?
Yeah, well, Damien, like as most people would say, in terms of afforestation, the trees that have been, the forests that have been created, in so many instances displaced like really important and precious habitats, you know, species-rich grassland, curlew nesting grounds, hen harrier nesting grounds. So that was a disaster, you know. Look, it's going to be hard to claw back on that, but in terms of where the opportunities are, look, I do a lot of exploring around here in West Clare, and one thing I realise is that on almost every farm, there's a little nook of beautiful native woodland, and there's such a huge opportunity to incentivise farmers to just let that native woodland grow. And it would grow. That's, the trees have been planting themselves for millions of years. Those woodlands would expand and grow if we just took grazing pressure off them a little bit. And certainly if we changed the rules around clearing scrub. All scrub is, for the most part, is young forest. It's emergent forest. And look, I understand you don't want scrub all over your farm, but if we had a kind of a strategy, like allow scrub to accumulate there between that woodlands and that woodlands or down by the river, you know, I think that that would be the most ecologically sound native woodland scheme we could ever come up with.
Yeah, that was Ray O'Faulu in Milltown Malbay in County Clare. He's involved with Home Tree, whose aim is to establish and conserve permanent native woodland. And you can find out more at hometree.ie. Now, if you're a woman in business and thinking about growing that business, you might like to hear about Going for Growth. Now in its 14th year, it's a 6-month part-time program that allows women in established businesses to learn from each other while being mentored by a lead entrepreneur. It doesn't matter
the kind of business or where you live. To explain how it works, I'm joined by three women who've taken part in the programme over the years. Mary B. Walsh of Irwell Pallets and Eilish Quinn of Quinn Property and Carnew Mart are both in business in County Wexford, and Trina McGillery of Arrow Digital, Sna Forbaha I Gunti na Gáilge is also with us. Good morning to you all, Diagwich, to you all, and thanks very much for joining us. Trina, if I'll start with you down in the West, what happens at your first meeting for Going for Growth? How does it actually work?
So the idea is that a large group of women, maybe 80 women, 10 groups of 8, will all come together on the first meeting, and then each of those groups will meet six times throughout the course of the programme and then all come together again at the end. And maybe if I tell you a little bit about my group, so I did it in 2014, which is 8 years ago. It's very hard to believe. I had Fidelma McGurk of Payslip in Westport as my lead, and she was excellent and an amazing lead, you know, and brought a lot of a wealth of knowledge really to what we were learning. But the big part of it is the peer learning. So I had 8 ladies, you know, in our group, and I got to know them all really, really well. Some of them have since, I didn't know anybody the day that I started, but some of them have become real household names, like Marissa Carter of Cocoa Brown was in my group, Una O'Hagan of Maher's Pharmacy, and then there was many other successful businesses, Dorla Cafferkey from DataScan, Siobhan Byrne-Learitt from Adams & Butler, Rita from B Green Dry Cleaning. So they were all very, very successful ladies at the time, but with an ambition to grow.
How important was it, you mentioning all of those wonderful entrepreneurs there and business people, how important that it was a programme for women only? Did that make a bit of a difference?
Yeah, I think what I have found is that women are open up more in female-only environment. That sometimes we feel we're not good enough, sometimes we feel we're not enough, or you know, we're trying to put on a game face. And when you're in a group of women, we allow ourselves to be a little bit more vulnerable. We allow ourselves to express our fears. And then, of course, you know, as women, when somebody expresses their fears, we're straight away in to help our you know, our colleagues out and to help them to sort their problems.
Yeah, Mary B., if I can turn to you, tell me a little bit more about your pallet business there and the fact that you were mixing with other women from different walks of life, different businesses as well. Does that make it an even better experience?
Good morning, Damien. It does indeed. Delighted to be on your show. We're pallet manufacturers. Irwell Pallets is the name of the company, Damien, in North Wexford. We founded the company in 1990 and we're supplying the pharmaceutical, medical device, food, drinks, and construction and electronic sectors with the transit piece, Damien, that transports goods worldwide. When I started the business, there were a number of business organisations that I was a member of, but nothing, and I'm still members of a number of organisations, but nothing quite like what I found on Going for Growth, Damien. There, I seemed to just get the energy that reignited my ambition to grow and grow this business to an even greater business than it already was, so that we could take on more people, secure employment for the current team, which we have an amazing team here, Damien, in North Wexford. And again, to do a better job for our customers. And what I found in my group, in my Going for Growth group, was I had a board now, Damien, that I could not afford. I could bounce ideas around the table. I could talk about issues, about challenges, about strategies I might have been thinking about. I found that forum a very safe place to discuss all of that.
Sure.
That I hadn't found prior to my joining Going for Growth in 2014.
And Eilish, looking over the last 2 years, so many businesses have experienced all sorts of upside down changes because of what's been happening. Do you think the confidence that you got as a result of Going for Growth made it easier for you to deal with adversity over the last 18 to 20 months?
Good morning, Damien. Delighted to be on the show. And again, thanks for having me. It's a wonderful opportunity. Little did I ever think I would be on Radio 1 on a Saturday morning speaking about our business, which is quite varied. We have Quinn Property in Gorey and then Carnew Livestock Mart in County Wicklow. So My cycle was the 12th cycle. Monica Flood was our lead, and I didn't really know. I knew we were always very interested in improving the business and how can we do that. So, you know, I wasn't really quite sure what Going for Growth was going to offer me. But from reading and listening to the few things, I knew that I had to give it a try. And honestly, when I spoke to Mary yesterday, and she said it was a breath of fresh air. Yeah. And I totally related to that. It gave fresh perspective. She's genuinely inspiring women. They offered invaluable support. When COVID hit everybody,
yeah.
And you know, we continued. We were lucky in that we had already had met our group. Monica had, you know, we knew what we had to do, and we continued to meet online and empower each other to keep going as each one was struggling in their own individual business.
Yeah.
So that was really very reassuring, and it's something that I wouldn't have experienced before. You know, it's all business. And they all have such a common interest, and you know, they're all business, and that we're all just keen to hear how,
yeah,
you know, the different issues move on. So yeah,
and
it's truly worthwhile, and I'd encourage any woman listening today to do this. It's so worthwhile.
Yeah. No, it sounds like just chatting to the three of you there this morning that it certainly is something that you have not regretted, and you are better business people as a result of it, and being involved with people not only from your own county, from other counties and other walks of life and other businesses as well. Look, it's completely free, and I know that the closing date for applications for goingforgrowth.com, if you go online, goingforgrowth.com, the closing date is the 16th of December, fast approaching. So it's lovely to just get a sense of what it's like for all three of you this morning. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme, to Mary, to Trina, and to Eilish as well. We might get down and see you in the mart there sometime soon, indeed, Eilish. Thank you very much. You're listening to Countrywide here on RTE Radio 1.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.
And I'm joined here in Studio 10 by the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnell-Logue. You're very welcome to studio. Thanks for dropping in.
Good morning, Damien.
And we're going to chat to you presently about some of the important issues in the sectors that you represent. But first, if you put on your headphones, earlier this week, Hannah Quinn Mulligan visited Ennis Mart to see what was on the minds of farmers on the ground around the sales ring.
Want the minister to know anything, or he had any concerns, what would it be?
Early retirement, definitely. For every farmer, get older people retired early.
Because the average age of farmers is what?
100, I'd say.
And what's your own name? Whereabouts are you farming?
Richard Pine, Kilmady. No, I think this man here has a few challenges.
I'm Gary McNamara, and I'm from Killaloe in County Clare.
I think at the moment the biggest challenge farmers are facing is the emissions. And how are they going to sort it out? Like that, you know, the place has been polluted by a lot more than cows. And what solution are they going to put in place for farmers? The beef sector is under enough of pressure at the moment, with the price of fertilizer and the price of meal and the price per day to feed cattle. So how do they put farmers' minds at ease at the moment? The minister must remember that the farming community actually got Ireland out of the recession that it was in, and it was the only thing that kept the country going when we had nothing else. How was he going to sort it?
Ted Powell is my name. Chuckle and farmer from West Clare, like.
So you have the marsh docket there in front of you. I mean, yeah. Were you happy with the prices that you got?
No, because I had the quality cattle, like.
Were these limousines?
They were limousines, yeah. Beautiful cattle.
I want you to tell the minister now we'll talk to him. This is one thing you have to put through to him. The price of fertiliser is a joke. They'll have to be down the price.
Oh,
just gone up through the roof altogether. It's got to be 800 euro. Told someone.
Mind the dairy men will test.
She won't
afford that, like.
Ah, that's outrageous.
My name is Anna Considine, farming in Liscannor, County Clare, and we're farming suckler and sheep.
Do you see a future in agriculture for yourself?
I do, but it is currently hard to maintain a small herd the way things are going.
Uh, how many acres would you have at home, roughly?
80.
Do you think there's enough support there for young farmers?
It's all kind of up in the air at the moment, but it's hard to determine. Even in college, we're going through it in college now, the future for young farmers, and especially smaller farm enterprises, and it's very uncertain at the moment.
My name is Daniel Mitchell. I farm with feed a lot of heifers. But the problem we have with the minister, with the new thing that he's bringing out, is why that everything has to involve an organisation like Burbee and everything. How come nothing can be just done for itself? That's basically now what I want to know of the minister.
And what's the mood been like amongst farmers this year so far?
It has been good enough, but sure, the cattle could be a lot dearer. The fact is they're holding back all the time. The same with the sheep, they're holding back on the prices, and they could give a lot more if they want it.
Just popped outside the Marsh Rings, and Mart manager Martin McNamara is here with me. And I guess farmers have a lot of concerns.
Yeah, there's a big worry about the cost of fertiliser for next year. There's a big worry about within the farming community about the restrictions that will apply under both CAP and the climate action. And there's a huge amount of uncertainty there. And I suppose people feel aggrieved that we're such a small country and we think we can change the world. And we're only a dot in the ocean, and then they read articles and see Brazil expanding by two or three counties every year. They find it hard to stomach in that regard.
All right, so lots of issues there raised by farmers in the Mart in Ennis this week. And Minister, just before you were coming in, I was, you know, in knowing you were coming in, I was reading up on a lot of different... I mean, you've an awful lot of areas to cover, there's no doubt about it. So we'll try and get to some of the issues that were raised there. I want to start with what Gary McNamara from Killaloo had to say. Carbon budgets, they've been set now between 22 and 30% for agriculture. What mainly needs to happen on Irish farms to make these targets achievable?
Yeah, well, listen, it's interesting to hear the feedback from farmers there in Innismart, and I was in the Mart myself, and I suppose you could say a much more deeper vox pop I carried out there. I had a three-hour meeting in Innismart with farmers from right across Clare, and it was one of 27 meetings I've had over the last two months right across the country to discuss with farmers their concerns and, you know, where we're at, and also how we take Irish agriculture forward in a really strong way that has farm profitability as its at its core and also sustainability at its core. And, you know, Gary's point there very much speaks to that in terms of how we can ensure that in terms of addressing that emissions challenge, which is not just unique to agriculture, but which is right across the all sectors of the economy and right across the globe.
But is it an achievable ask?
It is, yeah. And I worked very hard with my government colleagues. It was one of the key priorities this year was to get an outcome in terms of the Climate Action Plan, which, while being ambitious for agriculture, would be deliverable for agriculture and would enable Irish farmers to continue to do what they are world-class and world-leading in doing, which is producing high-quality, sustainable food, but also continue to reduce the emissions profile of that even further.
And how are they going to do that? What's the breakdown going to be in terms of maybe reducing production, reducing numbers, and innovation and technology?
It's about managing the grassland we have really well, but also looking at how we can adopt new science and new technology to contribute really significantly to that. So there's lots of potential and scope there, for example, in terms of how we maximising soil fertility, that we can grow grass. And grass is a really important feature, obviously, of our agriculture model, and that's what makes us quite unique internationally, and that's what makes us one of the most world-leading sustainable food-producing nations, is the fact we're pasture-based. But in terms of how we introduce more clover swards, more multi-species swards, which can actually fix naturally nitrogen into the ground and grow grass that way, reduce the need for chemical fertiliser by doing that, and also by more efficient use of organic fertiliser through the use of slurry, for example, the adoption of low-emission slurry spreading. There's real significant potential in relation to how we can do that. Then when you look now, about 30% of our overall agricultural emissions is nitrous oxide-based, which is based on management of fertilisers. 65% of our emissions then are methane based, so there's potential there in relation to reducing.
So how do we reduce methane?
So there's potential there in relation to reducing, for example, the average age of slaughter, which is currently 27 months. So every month we bring that down will be an achievement in relation to reducing methane emission profile. But also there's lots of work going on, which I've invested in as minister, particularly through Chugusk, in relation to the science and technology around this. And farmers and members of the public will have seen this in recent weeks too, being covered in the media. So even only this week, for example, some of the research coming out of Chugusk, which is showing that the same types of animals with the same capacity to produce beef and to convert into beef, but you have different emissions profiles in terms of methane.
So are you saying...
30%, for example, from one animal to another.
Okay, so are you saying that we've probably gone past the discussion about reducing cattle numbers and cow numbers?
Yeah, well, I've been very clear throughout this, and also very clear across government, that it's really important that we continue to produce the food that we do. That's really important. It's not about reducing our herd. We are going to keep the herd stable. And in doing so then, through
what
the
What does stable mean? Not increasing?
Yes, yeah, not increasing. So, and in doing so, by keeping it stable then, the various measures we'll be taking, both in terms of grassland management and in terms, for example, adopting new technology around breeding and around, for example, the likes of feed additives, and that we will reduce the profile of both nitrous oxide and methane over the course of this decade.
Okay, so by keeping the herd stable over the next 10 years, you can still reduce emissions to that target of 30%.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. No, that will take a lot. It will be a decade of change, Damien, and this decade ahead of us will be a decade of adding value to what we produce as opposed to adding volume to it. But in adding that value to it, we will see farm incomes grow in the process, because, of course, you can be in the hamster wheel where you're producing more and more and earning less and less, and that's not to anyone's benefit. What we want to do is to continue to produce that food that is already so valuable, but to premiumise it further, to make it more sustainable and to add value to it. And if you look at the Food Vision 2030 strategy, which I published just at the end of the summer and which all key stakeholders participated in under the chairmanship of Tom Arnold, that outlines...
Well, the environmental pillar didn't participate. Yeah, well, they pulled out because they reckoned...
But just to finish the previous point, that outlines how, by taking a food systems approach which is very much sustainability at its core, over the next decade, we can grow the value of our exports from 14 billion euro today to 21 billion euro by the end of the decade.
And when I think of that, I can't but think of the unstoppable force and the immovable object. How can we have a reduction in agri emissions and an increase in the value of exports being achieved simultaneously? Classic example of being mutually exclusive there, isn't it?
No, mutually beneficial. Mutually beneficial.
So we can increase the value of exports and reduce emissions at the same time?
Yes.
You think that's possible?
One will lead to the other, because...
Well, why did the environmental pillar pull out of those?
Well, just to say why it's mutually beneficial, because everybody in every aspect of their lives now wants to be sustainable in what they do and in everything they do. And we've seen rapid change in relation to people's behaviour in that over the last 2-3 years even. And that will become even more pronounced in the years ahead. So in terms of how, like other aspects of people's lives, in terms of how they produce food, they're going to be looking at the sustainability of the product they are consuming. And that is going to be a factor in them buying that food and also in the price they pay for that food. Now, that's not just going to be nationally, but internationally. So our starting point here as a food producing nation is that we're one of the most sustainable and low emissions food producing countries in the world. But as we become even more than that and improve in that further, we will be a first preference choice for consumers in terms of actually wanting to consume Irish food because of the fact it is so sustainable. And that's how we will maximise its value
of the food we produce. You say that, and then we read various EPA reports which continually warn that the consequences of business as usual attitude from corporate agriculture is destroying our waterways. And this week as well, a number of Brussels-based environmental NGOs have hit out at the CAP strategic plans of a number of member states, including Ireland, saying that it goes nowhere near to what is required to protect biodiversity and improve the environment.
Well, I don't agree with that. And first of all, if you look at where we've come coming out of the most recent CAP, we're second only to Finland in the EU in terms of our environmental spend within the CAP programme for environmental measures, and particularly targeting biodiversity. And that is only going to improve and grow very much further under this new CAP programme, because we can't have a situation where in any of the activities that we do, whether it's farming or otherwise, that we're negatively impacting the environment. We can't have a situation where water quality is in any way deteriorating. So through the CAP plan, and for example through the new nitrates programme, which I'm also finalising at the moment, very stringent measures and oversight will be in place. Okay. Stepped up to ensure that while we're producing that food, that it's done in sync with the environment and it's done in a way that can actually see water quality improve. And that's something I'm really, really determined about, and it's something that's really, really important for the platform on which we're food will be built over the next number of years.
On that note, I mean, we've asked a couple of stakeholders, I suppose, in all of this, in the environment and in agriculture, for their opinions. First of all, we asked Una Duggan, an environmental advocate, if she was the Minister for Agriculture, what would her priorities be?
I'm Una Duggan, Head of Advocacy at Birdwatch Ireland. If I was Minister for Agriculture, my three priorities would be the following. I would work to address cheap food policies and ensure that farmers get a fair price for the food they produce. And included in that, I would tackle food waste, as Irish households throw out about 150 kilograms of food annually, which is a terrible waste. I would redirect funding in Ireland's draft CAP strategic plan to transition to much more sustainable agriculture. There's very little funding to support horticulture, and there are a few targeted and results-based actions that farmers can do to address problems relating to biodiversity, water quality and greenhouse gas emissions. In total, only about 7% of citizens' funding in Ireland's 9.8 billion CAP budget can really be said to hopefully result in effective action to address problems. We have to give farmers the financial incentives to help transition. I would fund a 30 million euro scheme to pay farmers to farm in support of the curlew, the lapwing and the snipe and all the other breeding waders that are being wiped out. There's currently nothing in the CAP plan to help restore waders, and this must change.
OK, so a couple of points there. One of them, 7% of the 9.8 million, a billion budget is going for identifiable improvements in the environment. That's according to Birdwatch Ireland.
Oh, right through our CAP plan, whether it be through Pillar 1, where there will be minimum of 25% spent on eco schemes in Pillar 1, unlike before, and right throughout Pillar 2. But also in terms of all of those payments that will be through both those pillars, they will all be based on the principles that farming will be conducted in an environmental manner and in a way that contributes to the improving the environment around us and addressing that biodiversity challenge that is there. Some of the measures will very, very specifically seek to address that. So, for example, in relation to the new agri-environmental scheme, which I've secured 50% extra funding for in this CAP, that will very specifically target measures to improve biodiversity and indeed to address emissions reductions as well. Even if you look at our beef scheme, for example, the carbon suckler efficiency scheme, which I've increased the funding for significantly. So in the previous CAP, it had a maximum payment for, starting at 90 euro per cow, and that's being increased to 150 euro per cow. But the whole structure of that is about reducing the carbon footprint of the production of that beef.
Okay, so you recognise the new CAP strategic plan is going to see biodiversity.
And I met Una last week directly as well, and we discussed, you know, the need for good measures in there to support, for example, the curlew, lapwing, snipe and breeding waders. And that is something we are finalising as well in terms of how we can ensure that the environmental schemes cover that, because we there's so many of our bird species which are under pressure.
Okay.
We have to all work together to ensure that we reverse that pressure they've been under in recent years and they're protected for future generations. And I'm determined that this CAP will deliver on that.
All right. OK, just one other issue before I move on to our next speaker, and that is fertiliser prices. You heard farmers complain about it there. It's a big worry. Farmers are price takers. They're not price makers. They can't put up the price of their produce because inputs are gone up, and they've increased by over 100%, I think, in the last year.
Yeah.
Can you do anything there?
Well, they have, and they've been very much driven by gas prices, and it is a real concern I have for the start of next year. We've already seen it in the second part of this year, and I think cost input pressures are going to be a real challenge for farming in the year ahead. I've engaged in one of the first tasks I asked Frank Amara to undertake after he's appointed as Chagas director was to work with his team to put together a plan as to how we can absolutely maximise the efficient use of organic fertiliser next year. And Teagasc are putting together a plan which we will be engaging with farmers, because we do have a lot of latent untapped potential in relation to the efficient use of slurry. And that's something I think we really need to step up on over the course of the next year.
Okay, well, we're going to move on, because we asked Brian Rush, a dairy farmer and vice president of the IFA, what, if he was sitting in your seat, his priorities would be.
My name is Brian Rush. I'm a dairy farmer from Carbery in County Kildare, and I'm also IFA deputy president. I farm alongside my wife Rebecca and my two sons, John, who's 10, and Reese, who's 7. If I was Minister for Agriculture, my priorities would be, number one, I would ensure that the cap delivered in supporting farm income, particularly among the vulnerable sectors in the beef, sheep and tillage sector. I would make sure that measures contained within the cap, particularly on environmental schemes, would deliver a proper return to farmers. So that is that the payment for the measures would not only cover the cost of the measure, but on top of that, would give an income to the farmer. The second thing I do was I would ensure that my department, so my Department of Agriculture, and my colleagues around the cabinet table understood the levels that the farmers have gone to in terms of addressing climate action already, in terms of the money they've invested, in terms of facilities, in terms of their herds, in terms of equipment. And I would get it into their heads that farmers are already on a journey, and there's a significant mindset change on farm. As a farmer, you'd have to feel that there's many, many people sitting in their own cabinet, sitting in the Dáil, and even within the minister's own department that don't fully understand and recognise what farmers have done so far. The final thing I do is I'd make it my absolute priority that no farmer or no family should be left behind when it came to addressing climate action. We all know the sectorial targets that farming has are quite challenging, but we need to make sure we don't lose any farmers. So the negative costs of addressing climate change and climate challenge cannot be borne alone by farmers. Others in the sector have to take on some of that cost, because if farmers are expected to take on the full cost of it, it'll mean farmers go out of business.
Okay, so Brian Rush there talking, one of the things he mentions there is what he says, lack of respect in your department for farmers, lack of respect around the cabinet table. And indeed, earlier this week you will have read that Green MEP Kieran Cuff has written to bank CEOs asking them to consider not giving loans to farmers to expand their herds. What did you make of that, by the way?
I didn't make very much of it, Damien, and I think we have very comprehensive plans in Irish agriculture.
You share government with his party, though.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't have to share every action that a particular public representative takes, and I certainly don't agree with Kieran's letter at all.
Maybe he's been cruel to be kind.
We have very comprehensive plans in relation to both Food Vision 2030, which is the strategy for the next 10 years, also in relation to the CAP strategic plan, which I'm finalising right now after much consultation with farmers in every county in the country, and also through an ambitious but deliverable climate action plan, which sets the direction for Irish agriculture, and which all in agri-food will work towards, and those that support agri-food in terms of the banking and financial sector also will take their guidance from. So that's what I would be saying to the banks and to everyone else and to all funders out there, is to back Irish agriculture over the period ahead and back the plans that we have. In relation to Brian's three points, and listen, I would agree with all of with those points Brian are making. I'd make it be very clear in terms of saying that we need to be much more in the front foot.
Yeah.
We should need to be much more in the front foot in relation to putting forward all that Irish farmers have done, okay, and to sell that story really well, because people shouldn't lose sight of this fact, as I said it before in this interview, we're one of the most sustainable producers of food in the world. That's our starting point, which we will build on the time ahead. But I would say this too, that there's so much commonality there between what Brian is saying and between what Una is saying. We don't have to be at loggerheads, and I see my job as minister is bringing all those strands together into a sustainable and workable platform and plans that will see food produced really sustainably and even more sustainably as the decade goes on, and also that will be done in a way that supports biodiversity, restores wildlife, improves water quality and reduces emissions.
Okay. All right. You seem fairly positive then about the future of agriculture, despite the huge challenges in relation to the environment and so on and so forth. Minister, before we finish, two other matters this week, and obviously the Mica families, they are annoyed at what has been published this week in relation to a sliding scale of payments for the rebuilds of their houses. Now, you were on local radio in Donegal, you were in Highland yesterday, and I think you reported as saying there'll be no sliding scale. Can you Clarify what you mean by that.
So the scheminess, and I've worked very hard with my colleagues and campaigners, homeowners have campaigned very strongly on this over the last number of months to get a scheme that will deliver 100% redress. And the scheme that was published this week by the government will deliver 100% redress in each year going forward, and it will be updated at the start of each year. In relation to how the market, exactly what's going on in the market is reflected, that is something that the government will be engaging with the chartered surveyors to assess. And in terms of whether that involves a sliding scale and whether it's a two-step scale, a three-step scale or no scale in terms of how that's assessed, depending on the size of a house, is something that the government will engage with the surveyors
on. So
it
hasn't been fully finalised yet?
Yeah, no. So it's something in advance of or by February next year will be updated in terms of showing what the proper and appropriate costs are to reflect the market.
Well, was it a bit of a try-on then this week?
No, it was based, I think it was based on this. It was based on the 2021 starting point, and what we wanted to do in announcing the scheme was to give indicative figures, which are indicative, but to give as much clarity as possible. The alternative, for example, is not to give indicative figures, then people don't know what a potential starting point is. So the indicative figures were provided in announcing the scheme to be updated, working with surveyors who are able to reflect what's happening in the market, so that each year, and this it will be updated then every year from that point onwards, and this is a scheme that will take many, many years and need to be with us for many, many years. So it's important that every year it updates to reflect the actual market reality, because it's only by having a clear market reality that we can give 100% right. of what that cost is. And I think it's something, and the key message that I have for homeowners is this is a scheme that can give confidence and clarity to homeowners that whether their home is fixed next year or the year after or over the next number of years, it's a scheme that will adjust year on year to ensure that they can get 100% of the support to have their home fixed.
And we've 30 seconds left. Do you agree that members in NPHET should now need permission from the government before they go on radio or television?
I think it's really important that NPHET and the government work really closely together to address what has been a really enduring challenge, and I think one that overall everybody that have worked really well together to address. And I think that message needs to be very clear and well communicated.
Has the government lost the room though?
No, I don't think so. No. Listen, the government has had to respond to an unpredictable pandemic, which has been very hard to predict, you know, as to what its movement would be. We don't want to be in the situation that we're taking the steps that we're taking, but we're taking them because we have to be cautious and keep people safe and take appropriate steps in good enough time to ensure that further measures would not be necessary to avoid other measures down the road. So I think it's the right thing to do, and it's about ensuring people can live their life to the best of their capacity ensuring that we have appropriate precautions in place.
Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConnell, OTD, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.